Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Professor Andrew Whitehead. He is a professor of sociology at Clemson University, and he has a new book out that he co-authored with his colleague Sam Perry. It's titled, Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States. A little bit more about our guest today. As I mentioned, he's at Clemson University, and he is also the assistant director of the Association of Religion Data Archives, or ARDA, which is a leading online religion resource. He's also an associate editor for the Journal of Sociology of Religion, and he is the author of over 30 peer-reviewed publications. We welcome once again to Common Threads, Professor Andrew Whitehead.
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me back.
Absolutely. Listen, very close to the end of last week's conversation, you might remember that you talked about the different labels you've come up with for people in the broad field of Christian nationalism. And
right.
You just mentioned them briefly, and I'd really like to go more in depth. In the Salon interview, I neglected to mention that how I came upon you was a wonderful article in Salon about your book. And it was, there was an interview there with Paul Rosenberg. And he asks you about your three main arguments. He says, first, you argue that understanding Christian nationalism, its content and its consequences, is essential for understanding much of the polarization in American popular discourse. And he said, your analysis doesn't just look at supporters of Christian nationalism, but those with a broad range of perspectives, which you characterize in four groups. So I'd like to ask you about each of them. And let's start with ambassadors. What is distinctive or characteristic of them?
Yeah, so ambassadors are those Americans who most strongly embrace Christian nationalism. And the way that we create these four groups, if you'll permit me just a quick kind of discourse on our methodology, you know, we conducted surveys with thousands of Americans, and we asked six different questions having to do with, in their view, the role of religion and American society or the federal government, and especially Christianity. So we ask questions like, should the federal government declare the United States a Christian nation or advocate Christian values or allow religious symbols in public spaces? And our respondents were able to either strongly disagree, disagree, agree, or strongly agree with these questions. And then we assigned a numerical value to their answer. So somebody that strongly disagreed would score a 0. Strongly agree would be a 4. And then we added those together to create what we see as a Christian nationalism scale. And it ranged from 0 to 24. And when we looked at all the respondents and added them all up, we see that Americans were distributed all across this scale. So we had those that rejected, you know, basically, or strongly disagreed with every question, those that strongly agreed or agreed with every question. And many Americans, the majority actually, are somewhere in the middle. And so as we look at this scale, we thought, well, it can be a little bit, you know, cumbersome or even, you know, a little hard to talk in terms of higher or lower on the scale. And so we broke them down into four groups. And so our ambassadors on this scale are those that are at the upper quarter of the scale. So they score, you know, a 19 or 20 to the 24. And so this group, they're agreeing or strongly agreeing with these different questions, and they really desire to see Christianity privileged in the public sphere. They want to see our laws, our social, you know, our identity as a nation, our social policies. They want to see a clear representation of Christianity influencing those in all aspects of social life. And so the ambassadors are those that most strongly embrace Christian nationalism.
And real quick, first of all, I'm assuming that the way these questions were asked, nobody is going to mistake the question about this being a Christian country for that of one asking, is this a Christian majority country, which is, you know, factual, correct? You see, hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, I sure do. Yep. Yeah, so with our questions, the way that we have them structured is all about the role that they see Christianity or religion playing in society. So it's less of, do you think the U.S. is a Christian nation? And more of, which I think is more to the heart of the matter, do you think it should be? And it's that desire to see a Christian nation that really matters. Because just as you said, if we're talking about, so as sociologists, we're actually less interested in, is the United States a Christian nation or not? What we're interested in is, do people believe it should be? Because even if it is or isn't, doesn't matter. If they think it should be, that's going to affect how they see the world, how they act within it, how they interpret different laws and policies, or, you know, the people moving in across the street. And so just as you point out, it has less to do with is it or is it not, but really, do you want it to be?
And when people say it should be, I'm assuming you're rather confident that the way they understand and describe what a Christian nation would be has a rather conservative profile, as opposed to somebody who says, oh yeah, I think we should be a Christian country. I think we should feed the poor and, you know, not make war on people and et cetera, et cetera. Did you have anybody who profiled that way?
Yeah, that is a really great question. I think that's what's most interesting about our work and what fascinates me endlessly is that what we see when we ask people these questions and as we look at Christian nationalism is that it really is associated for many Americans, and we could even qualify it more to say white Americans, it is associated with much more politically conservative policy goals and ideologies. And really that has to do with the last 40 years of religion and politics and how that's interacted, where it is associated much more with, you know, keeping immigrants out or defending our borders or Second Amendment rights or, you know, opposing gay marriage, having women staying in the home rather than gender equality, all of those things. And so as we interview and talk with Americans, we'll have those that reject Christian nationalism, but they're very religious, and in some cases too, they're even conservative evangelicals religiously, but they see their faith as encouraging them or pushing them to a very different end. And what that looks like, as you say, where they, you know, want racial justice and equality. They want gender equality. They want to feed the poor. They want to, you know, care for immigrants. And so Christian nationalism, as we see it, is something very particular. And we're even finding that in different social locations. So if we ask or look at white Americans who embrace Christian nationalism, they tend to have views that, you know, look at racial inequality and they think it doesn't exist, or they'll say that the reason there is racial inequality is that, you know, black Americans don't work as hard. They'll have very individualized and kind of racist views towards that. Whereas black Americans who embrace Christian nationalism, it works completely differently for them, where they see much more structural explanations to racial inequality. And so this idea of a Christian nation we're finding means something different to different groups in the U.S. But for white Americans, it tends to encourage them much more xenophobic, racist, you know, patriarchal types of ideologies and policy goals.
So let's move on to the categorization of rejectors.
So our rejectors really are those at the bottom of that scale. And so these are individuals and Americans who strongly disagree, or at very least disagree, with all of these questions. And so in many ways, you could say they're a mirror image of ambassadors, where they believe and desire to see, you know, social policies and goals where, you know, Christianity is not privileged And so they repudiate that. And so I think what's interesting is that some people will say or talk in terms of, you know, we need to look at Christian nationalists and these people that embrace it. But really, what we find is that Christian nationalism, this cultural framework, it tells us a lot, even if you really reject it. And so that's why it's so important to really look at rejectors as well, because that shows, again, the power of Christian nationalism, that strongly rejecting it really is indicative of how you see the world and can tell us a lot about the laws and policies and different ideologies that that person holds as well.
And the people who were a part of your survey, did they all self-identify as Christians in some form, or was it broader than that, your sample?
It was broader. It was a sample. These were representative samples of the U.S. population. And so we had Christians and we had non-Christians. We had unaffiliated. We had people of non-Christian faith. So it was a broad spectrum of the U.S. population. And what's interesting, too, there is that even those that are outside the Christian faith, some would still be ambassadors or would be those that strongly embrace Christian nationalism. And so here again, we're able to distinguish between private or personal religiosity as one thing, and then this desire for public expressions of religion like Christian nationalism, where you may not be individually religious, but you still desire to see a society that Christianity has an outsized influence on, or the social policies and national identity of the United States is strongly influenced by, as they view it, again, Christianity in quotes.
I have seen over the years, occasionally, Orthodox Jews who embraced, I wouldn't have called it Christian nationalism back then, but it certainly sounds like what it was, you know, back in the 70s and 80s and later on, you would see some Orthodox rabbis really embracing some of these televangelists who had a dream for a more conservative, so-called biblically based America. And the Jews were going, yeah, that we want that too. I'm assuming that these are the ambassadors, the non-Christian ambassadors, at least part of the non-Christian ambassadors you might be talking about.
Yeah, no, it is. And too, as we look at ambassadors, you know, the vast majority are conservative evangelicals, but there are many mainline Protestants, Catholics, and even non-Christian or non-religious people there too. Those people are there, although a small number. And so what's really interesting and fascinating to when we compare, you know, those ambassadors across different religious traditions, they are much more alike than they are even with co-religionists who are rejectors or resistors. And so, you know, let's take your example of, you know, a Jewish American. If they're an ambassador, they're going to look a lot more like white evangelicals who are also ambassadors than they're going to look like Jewish Americans who resist or reject Christian nationalism. And so, even within religious traditions, we're finding that Christian nationalism really is kind of the axis around which a lot of this rotates, and it can kind of create these divides within religious traditions.
Yes, I, as somebody who's been involved in the interfaith work for almost 30 years now, I can tell you that, you know, a liberal Jew and a liberal Christian, or a liberal Christian and a liberal Muslim, have more in common than, say, a conservative or Orthodox Jew and a liberal Jew, or a conservative Christian and a progressive Christian. It's quite fascinating. I want to mention real quick that if you're just joining us, you're listening to WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Professor Andrew Whitehead. We're talking about his book, Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States. And briefly, let's talk about the last two groups that are mentioned in your book, accommodators and resistors.
Yeah. Yeah, so resistors are those that are a little more undecided than perhaps rejectors are, where they, you know, may be okay with religion in the public sphere to some extent, but don't necessarily want to see Christianity privileged or would oppose that to some extent. But they aren't quite as strongly opposed as rejectors are. And then accommodators are really the, again, mirror image of resistors, where they might see and say, yeah, I want Christianity to play a role in U.S. society, but not necessarily at the expense of other religious faiths. Or maybe, you know, we privilege Christianity a little bit because many of us are Christian, but it doesn't necessarily need to be enshrined, let's say. And so these two groups, resistors and rejectors, make up a little more than half of the population. And so many Americans, as we talked about kind of on the spectrum of Christian nationalism, are right there in the middle. You know, they're a little opposed, or maybe they accept it and to some extent, but it isn't wholeheartedly. And so those two groups really, I think, are a key too, as we look towards trying to build a more civil society. Those on the ends, you know, they probably won't necessarily be willing to talk or to find any compromise. But those Americans in the middle, these might be people that we can work with to try and build something, you know, equitable for all people.
If you look at Pew surveys, it seems that Christian participation, rather, is waning, and the largest so-called denomination today is that of the nuns, the non-affiliated. If that is the case, why are we even having this conversation?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And it's true for the last, since the mid-90s, where we really see this upswing in unaffiliated Americans, we see attendance rates and those types of things, you know, start to decline and dip. And now, too, with the pandemic, it's going to be really interesting to try and follow the effect that this has on institutionalized religion and what people do on Sundays or what they believe. And the way that we look at it with Christian nationalism, it is something that exists outside of institutionalized religion. So even if we see a decrease in the number of Americans that attend church on Sundays or Saturdays or go to religious services of some kind or read sacred scriptures, Christian nationalism as a cultural framework is still going to be largely influential, and really for two reasons. One is, again, it exists outside of institutionalized religion. So even Americans who are already non-religious, they don't attend much, maybe don't really even personally have a high degree of personal religiosity, they still might be accommodators or even ambassadors of Christian nationalism. The second reason we think it'll still matter is that for those Americans who strongly embrace Christian nationalism, if even more of society moves away from organized religion, and maybe this group even grows a little bit smaller, they are going to feel even more embattled as being a smaller group. And that is going to be key, because it's going to be something that they even identify with more strongly. It's going to be central to their identity. And so even if the country as a whole is less religious, those Americans that stay religious or in our, you know, work are strongly embracing Christian nationalism, that's going to be even more salient for them, and they're going to align and work towards those ends even more kind of in lockstep than before. And so I think that's why it's important to really be aware of Christian nationalism, knowing what it is, what it's associated with, and how it operates, because it's going to be with us for some time.
And we do know that well-organized and very passionate minority groups certainly can affect change profoundly.
For sure.
While you were talking, I was thinking, well, let's see, what about, for instance, marriage equality? They lost on that. They clearly lost on that because there is a groundswell of support for marriage equality. But I'm wondering, for instance, is the passion that we saw in the middle and on the left in America for marriage equality, mm-hmm. does that exist for, say, the display of Ten Commandments on government property? And I think I see areas where they could win very easily simply because people will just kind of shrug their shoulders and say, well, yeah, 10 commandments in front of City Hall, that doesn't bother me. I can, I don't have to follow them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm thinking might happen.
It would be
case by case. Again, they lost on gay marriage, but they can win in multiple areas.
Yeah, that is a really astute observation. I think it's right on. And what we're finding is that your listeners might be interested. We talk about it in the book a bit, is what is called Project Blitz. And so this is a set of legislative, it's basically a legislative playbook that those on the right and really Christian nationalists or ambassadors of Christian nationalism have written up, where they have kind of three tiers of the types of laws they want their politicians organizing and supporting and trying to pass. And one of those, the first tier, are kind of proclamations that say, hey, we're a Christian nation, or we have a Christian heritage, or just like you said, you know, displaying 10 commandments at City Hall or wherever else. Things that they see, you know, many Americans may, like you said perfectly, shrug their shoulders at, say, well, that doesn't bother me that much. So they want to see those passed. And if they can pass those, then they move on to the second tier. In the second tier, they may have things where it has a little bit more teeth, right? Maybe we try to, you know, work on textbooks or have something that maybe enshrines Christianity even in a little bit more in public life. And if they're able to do that, then they move and lay that groundwork. Then they move on to the third tier, where it becomes much more explicit, might have something to do with, you know, marriage equality or transgender persons or things like that, where they want to build the case. And they start at things that they think, well, many Americans may not really bat an eye at. And so, again, I think, you know, you pointed out perfectly how important it is to be aware of what they're trying to do, you know, these politicians and political operatives, and the role that Christian nationalism plays in American life, because it may seem innocuous, right? But when we put it all together, you start to see that it can have really severe outcomes on our civil society, like whether we're going to be able to operate as a democracy or not. It could play a role in that in the future. And so I think really being aware of that is key.
In the last couple of moments we have here on today's episode, would you agree that Christian nationalism goes all the way back to, say, the Declaration of Independence or the Constitutional Convention? Is it fair to say that there always has been this kind of movement?
Yeah, I do. I think you could say, too, it almost even predates the formation of the United States and goes into the earliest colonies, where for those coming to the shores from Europe, seeing themselves as part of a divine plan and that there's a divine covenant, and two, not just this kind of myth or story about who we are as a people and religion and Christianity playing a role in that, but two, that being intertwined with ideas of nationality and race, and those things, you know, play a part in it. So from the earliest colonies and how they treated people of other faiths, or especially indigenous populations and then Africans, and on through even the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the formation of the United States of America, Christian nationalism has been a part of that desire to outline who we are as a people, and again, interwoven in that is not only, you know, we're a Christian nation, but what that means. And in many ways, it meant we're white, Protestant, and then it became more broadly Christian, but a country that benefits those individuals more so than others.
Andrew, we're out of time for this episode, but I want to thank you so very much for joining us. Do you have a website of your own?
You know, I don't. And so I'm active on Twitter. And so if people with access to social media or find themselves on there, they can find me there. And so I'm usually sharing a lot about recent research on Christian nationalism. And then, too, I just now moving from Clemson University to Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. And so that's IUPUI for shorthand. But, you know, soon I'll have a faculty page there that they can find me on. And so hopefully if, you know, they're looking for that or want to know more, they can find me in those places.
Wonderful. And of course, they can always read your book, which is Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States. Andrew, thank you so very much for your time today and last week as well.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Really appreciate the work that you do and for allowing me time and for the conversation. I really enjoyed it.
You're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Please note, of course, that we are now podcasting. So if you look up Common Threads and Interfaith Dialogue on your favorite platform, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, Google, whatever, we are there. Please subscribe. Once again, I'm Fred Stella. We'll see you next week.